You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Arizona versus Daybell. The parties are present. The jury's not present. We're ready to bring in the jury.
Judge, just a couple things. One, the first witness is Special Agent Nicholas Balance. We do have a prior ruling on that. I would like to request that the FTR be sealed and any video by the media have him blurred for the prior court order.
So it's ordered directing that this particular witness, in order to not compromise other investigations that he may be involved in, the media is precluded from showing his image. Whether they blur him or just focus on another area of the courtroom is up to them, but they're not to broadcast his face or what he looks like.
And so we would ask that FTR as well be sealed.
I'll order that his portion of the testimony be sealed on the FTR. Anything else?
Just one other thing, Your Honor, outside the presence of the jury. We previously yesterday admitted redacted affidavits. For appellate purposes, I'm just going to ask to admit Exhibit 161, 163, and 168, which are the full actual affidavits, unredacted, just for appellate purposes only.
Numbers again, 161 through 163?
Sorry, 161, 163, and 168.
All right, 161, 163, 168 are admitted for the record. They're not to go back to the jury.
Thank you.
Anything from the defense before we bring the jury in?
Yes, Your Honor. I would also like to include the letter from Tammy Lachick that she's unavailable to testify to be admitted for appellate purposes as well.
What, is it marked?
I thought I had a copy. I will get a copy to you guys.
All right, we can mark it, and once it's marked, we'll take that up.
Okay.
No, that's a different one. Okay, let's bring the jury in. You want to bring, get your witness ready?
Do you have one in your file? I never saw it.
Jurors can be seated when they get to their chairs. All right, please be seated. The jury is present. The state can call its next witness.
State call Special Agent Nicholas Balance.
Sir, you're going to come up right here in front of my clerk and she'll swear you in.
Hello. You can state spell your first and last name. Right hand, please. You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you guys. Up around the court, quarter up the room.
Go ahead.
Would you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Yes, my name is Nicholas Balance. Last name is spelled B-A-L-L-A-N-C-E, and I'm a special agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
How long have you worked with the Federal Bureau of Investigations?
Since June of 2016.
What are the different jobs you've held while working there?
So I've served as a special agent as well as a period of time as a supervisory special agent. And currently I'm assigned to the Salt Lake City Division and work out of Boise, Idaho.
Now, prior to becoming a special agent with the FBI, did you have other law enforcement experience?
I did. I served as a deputy U.S. Marshal for 9 years prior to working for the FBI.
Now, as an agent with the FBI, have you been serving as a cast field asset?
Yes. So I'm a member of what's called the Cellular Analysis Survey Team, or CAST for short. And it's a specialty that utilizes cellular records as a part of investigations, trying to determine where a phone was whenever that has any significance to a criminal investigation.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been certified since October of 2019.
Okay. When you were working for the U.S. Marshals, did you do any work with cellular phones there?
I did. I was assigned to locating fugitives for a significant period of time with my career with the Marshal Service. And so I was able to use cell phone records to aid in locating fugitives successfully on several hundred occasions.
Can you tell us the education or training that you have to become a CAST member?
Yeah, so for the FBI with CAST, it starts with an application process where you would express interest in getting into the program. And then there's multiple trainings that you would go through before you're considered certified. It would start with our basic course, which is a two-day course. During that course, you're looking at cellular theory and discussing the different cellular providers that the major ones in the United States, and looking at records and putting those records onto a map. If you complete that successfully, you would go to our advanced course. In the advanced course, it's a little bit more in depth than basic, talking about some of the same topics, but you're also provided practical tests that you have to turn in, and then those tests are graded. At the conclusion of the advanced course, if you complete that successfully, you would go on to our what's called CIRA. It's a three-day course, or was when I went through it, and it's our critical incident readiness exercise. So as a part of that training, there's no instruction. You're just presented with problems and practical scenarios that you would have to go through, map out records, and reach a conclusion. And it's supposed to simulate like a command post style environment where you're getting information rapidly as a part of the training in a short duration. If you complete that course, you would go to our 4-week certification, and that is extensive classroom lecture that includes radio frequency professors that are teaching about in the field of radio frequency. We also get instruction from the major providers in the United States for the cellular industry to include their engineers as well as their subpoena compliance personnel. On top of that, we have a practical exercise that's assigned to us that we have to work from beginning to end that culminates into testifying at the end and presenting a report and being challenged on that report both by prosecution and defense that are simulated role players. At the conclusion of all of that, you would be considered certified as a member of CAST.
Do you have any annual recertification types of trainings to remain active as a CAST member?
Yes, so we have to complete a certain number of record analysis during that each year. And on top of that, we have a one-week certification conference that we attend each year that includes updates from the major providers in the cellular industry, as well as updates when it comes to the field of cellular technology from radio frequency engineers. And that's each year that you're in the program.
Okay. Have you previously testified as an expert in the area of cellular analysis?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
And as a CAST member?
Yes.
In this case, were you asked by the Gilbert Police Department to analyze some cell phone records?
I was.
Were you provided with cell phone records for a Lori Vallow for a 480-489-4652?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
Were you provided with cell phone records for an Alexander Cox for the phone number 480-351-9120?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
And were you provided with track phone records for a cell phone purchased from a Walmart in Idaho Falls, Idaho, with a phone number of 304-960-5998?
For that one, I was from track phone as well as from Verizon.
Okay. Were you also asked to include or analyze some Google historical location data associated with a Google account, homerjmaximus@gmail.com?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
Can you tell us what is historical location data?
Yeah, so Google offers a range of services with their products, and one of those being location history. So if you were to opt into location history on your Google account, what that would do is Google would maintain different locations that the device that's reporting that location information where it was historically. So if the user has that active, it would depend on the specific phone that was relaying that information to Google. So as an example, if I have a Google account and I have three different phones, I could access that Google account from all three of those phones, but if only one of them I've opted into location services, then any of the location history that Google maintained would only be associated with that specific phone for the location of where that phone was.
But the data overall from Google, they might provide information from all the devices, though, in terms of like searches that were done.
Correct. And again, it depends on how the user has their account set up with what information is going to be maintained by Google, specific to the many different products that Google has and offers to a user.
Okay. Were you asked to look at a specific time frame?
I was, specifically late September into early October in this case.
Did you create a report to help explain your process and explain the analysis of these cell phone records and these Google records?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
And because it's on a thumb drive, I'm just going to share the first page to you. And it's 189, if I can have my paralegal approach. Does that look like your report that you created in response to the request by Gilbert Police Department?
Yes, ma'am, it does.
State will move to admit Exhibit 189.
Any objection to 189? All right, 189 is admitted.
If I may publish. So starting on the first page of your report here, what did you include here for us to understand as part of your analysis and review of devices and phones?
So this is basically the cover sheet that I would put on all my reports, and it's showing the specific accounts that I did analysis for. So in this case, the three telephone numbers are listed at the top, one ending 4652, one ending 9120, and one ending 5998. Additionally, in this case, since I analyzed Google location history, the account that that Google location history was associated with is listed. That's the homerjmaximus@gmail.com. The specific dates that I conducted analysis for, which in this case were September 25th, 2019 through October 3rd of 2019. The date that I completed my report, case number associated with the report with the FBI, and then my name.
Now, you were provided these records that from the Gilbert Police Department for these cell phone numbers. Did that include information like subscriber information?
It did, yes, ma'am.
So the 480-489-4652, when you reviewed those cell phone records from Verizon, did that show a subscriber of Lori Vallow?
So it did not. It was subscribed through TrackPhone. So the name was not Lori Vallow, but there was an email address on the subscriber sheet associated with her.
Okay. The 480-351-9120, was that as a Verizon record? Did you receive the Verizon or the TrackPhone records?
I did, and that was subscribed to Alex Cox.
Okay. And the 304-960-5998, was that Verizon or TrackPhone?
So it was subscribed through TrackPhone.
When we're talking about TrackPhone and Verizon, and you talked about sort of major companies, how do those all interrelate?
Yeah, so when you're looking at cellular providers, you have two different categories looking at kind of from a wide perspective. You have companies that have infrastructure, like cellular towers that they maintain throughout the region that they provide service to. So Verizon is one of those companies. They have cell phone towers throughout the United States. When you're talking about TracFone, they're a mobile virtual network operator, which is basically means that they don't have cell phone towers, so they have to lease space with another network in order to provide service to their customers. So TracFone specifically in this instance was utilizing Verizon for the number ending 5998 to provide service to that customer.
Okay. And the Google records that you were provided for the HomerJMaximus@gmail.com, did that provide subscriber information?
It did, and that was associated with Alex Cox.
The second page of your report, what is this telling us about in terms of your analysis and explanation?
Yeah, this is basically just explaining the methodology of how I created this report and the process that goes into place in order to take records from a provider like Verizon and then put those records onto a map. Again, this is the methodology of how that would be done.
The third page here, one of the things that stood out was the time. We've heard about universal time. When you are looking at most or all of these cell phone records, were you provided the times in universal time, UTC time?
Yeah, so depending on the provider or the company that's providing records, kind of the biggest difference that you'll see in the different records types is a lot of them will provide records in different time formats. So specific to Google, they provide their records in what's called UTC time. And so that's just a time standard to where if you wanted to do the conversion and see what time that was in the area where you're at, you would have to do a conversion depending on what location you were in order to get it into the local time.
So when you were mapping these cell phone records and these Google location device records, were you converting them for the purpose of your report into the local time, either Arizona or Idaho?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. Okay.
So while we're going through your report, all of those times will reflect either Idaho or Arizona, depending on where we're looking at.
Correct, and the report will reflect those times as well.
What do we see here and what is this explaining to us?
So just to talk briefly about how cell phones work and kind of how we're utilizing the methodology that I spoke of to map and estimate where a phone was historically. One of the things that we look at is how far a cell phone tower provides coverage to. That's usually one of the major questions. So typically a cell phone tower density map is going to be look very similar to a population density map. So here we're looking at the city of Phoenix, and as you can see, there's a couple of towers in downtown Phoenix and in the urban areas of Phoenix. Those towers are going to provide coverage to a much smaller area due to the number of users that are needing to access a particular carrier. As you get more to the rural areas, you can see that those towers are more spread out, and towers in rural areas are going to have a larger coverage area just because there's not as many people in those locations.
Okay. And what is this page five reflecting?
This is just an example of what cell towers look like, not to insult anyone's intelligence, but if you look at the second tower from the left, traditionally back in the day, that's what we saw cell phone towers look like. Now there's more of a push to make them more aesthetically pleasing. So as you can see, like with the cactus, that's actually a cell phone tower, trying to disguise it so it's not looking like you have all this different metal around an area.
Page six, what is this explanation for us in terms of what we've seen for your analysis?
Sure, so whenever I'm mapping a estimated location of where a phone was, I'm looking at a traditional tower has three sides. So if you look at the graphic on the left, you're looking at the tower itself, and then there's three sets of antenna facing three different directions on the tower. So if you look at the graphic on the right, that's looking from the top down. And so the cell tower is pushing out coverage kind of 360 degrees. Well, what providers do is they put different sets of antenna on that tower in order to optimize their network and divide that coverage up into different sectors. So whenever I'm looking at a call detail record and I'm seeing a particular call that might be of interest to an investigation, I would then look at the tower and sector that was used. So that way I can plot that tower onto a map and I can see what direction from the tower that specific sector is providing coverage to. So again, this is a traditional tower, but it's divided into three equal parts with sector 1, 2, and 3. And in my tower list, I'm able to see the tower that was used, and I'm able to see what's called an azimuth, which if you're not familiar with that, it's basically just showing me what the center line of a sector, what direction it is coming from the tower. So if you're looking at this particular graphic on the right, you can't see the zero, but it starts with zero and goes all the way around to 360 degrees like a compass. So the center line of sector one, that azimuth would be 0 degrees. Same thing with if you look at sector two, the azimuth on sector two would be 120 degrees. So that azimuth allows me to estimate the location of where a phone was in relation to where that tower is.
All right, so this information of the tower sectors and the azimuth, is that, was that included with the cell phone records that were provided to you for those three phone numbers?
So it's included in a different file, but all of the different cellular providers that have towers throughout the United States, they have what's called a tower list that they update pretty regularly, at least every few months or quarterly. So in conjunction with the call detail records that show me who was called, at what date and time, what tower was used, I can marry that up with the tower list, and then I can have an estimate of where that phone was whenever it had that specific interaction with the network.
So someone like Verizon will provide you with, for that specific phone number, calls made and what tower they're using, and then you're able to then get the location of that tower from Verizon to map it.
Correct. If you think about, and everybody can still do this online, but back in the day when you had your cell phone, each billing cycle, you would get that bill in the mail, and it would be fairly thick because it included all the different calls that were made on that account. And so the call detail records are very similar to that. We can see the date and time. We can see that it was a voice call. We can see the direction, if it's incoming or if it's outgoing. We can see the associated number. But what you don't see on that bill is the tower information. So the call detail records that we obtain as law enforcement, they include those columns, and those columns allow me to know at a specific date and time this tower and sector was used, and then I can marry that up with the tower list and provide that estimated location of where a phone was.
So what do we see here on page 7? We have a legend for us.
Yeah, so this is depicting how I'm going to display different pieces of information on my report. So starting at the top, you're looking at Verizon Towers are going to be represented with red dots. That's going to be important because when I talked about before, where you're looking at the density of Phoenix and towers are going to provide coverage to a smaller footprint in an urban area where there's towers close by, it's important to note where other towers are in relation to the one used. Because typically what we see is that a tower provides coverage to the next tower. So that's what allows me to estimate the coverage area of a tower and sector that was used for a particular interaction. Next, we see how we would represent the tower and sector. So the blue, black, and the red are going to be the three different phones in this case. So if you look at the blue, that's representative of a tower and then the direction from the tower that that sector is facing. So the blue graphics are going to represent the phone number ending 4652. Black will represent 9120. And red will be representing 5998. Additionally, you see to the right the call information box. So whenever a phone has an interaction, you have that line in a call detail record, just like I talked about on the phone bill. I'm going to represent that particular call with the information that's provided from the carrier here. So you'll see the tower information at the top, the target number that it's associated with, so what record that particular line came from, what account, the date and time, direction of the call, duration of the call, type of the transaction, the word I mentioned earlier, azimuth, which gives us the direction from the tower that that specific interaction took place, and then the associated number. And then additionally to the left, you'll see a call information box where there's data interactions between a phone and a network. There's less information there, but you'll at least see the date and time and the direction from the tower that that sector faces.
Okay. So these are things we will see in the mapping that you did for this case.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Oops, hold on. All right, page 8.
So I just spoke about how I would map cellular records. This is a legend to show how I would map Google location information. So I talked a little bit about Google derives their location information from different data sets. And so Google can estimate a location of a device by locating it via the GPS chip within the phone. It can do it via Wi-Fi, as well as cellular. Specific to this case, we're only going to talk about locations that were derived via GPS and Wi-Fi. And so that's the icon that will be representative of that specific location line in the Google return. You also see a margin of error, which is showing Google in each specific line where they locate a device. They provide the estimated margin of error associated with that specific locate. So there will be a circle around the specific locate on the map. And then also, depending on if it's only a few locations, you'll see the information box with the specific date and time. If there are a significant number of records on the same map, it would be very difficult to read to put every single information box associated with each line. So you'll see a summary box, which is going to include the number of records that are represented, as well as the margin of error associated with each record and where it was sourced from. I'll also point out here that I know I mentioned it before, but all of the Google location history in this case is going to be reported from the device ending 9120.
All right, so the 9120 number is the phone associated to Alex Cox, or subscribed to Alex Cox.
That's correct.
So whenever we see Wi-Fi or GPS, it's from Alex Cox's cell phone.
Correct.
Now, you talked about a margin of error, and we see on page 8 here the R14. Can you tell us what that means?
Yeah, so if I were to map a latitude and longitude that Google provided onto a map, they also provide the margin of error. So I would place that icon on the map, and then I would look at the margin of error column. So it's represented by R and then a number, and that 14 there, that means 14 meter radius from that mark on the map. The radius would be 14 meters, and then draw the circle around at that 14 meter radius. That's the margin of error that they're reporting.
So does that mean if you are told that the phone is at this GPS location and there's a margin of error of 3 meters, that the phone could be anywhere within a 3 meter diameter of the spot?
Yes, and that's how Google's reporting it, so that's how we're mapping it.
Okay, and so when we see the circle that's shaded, is that your depiction of the margin of error that was provided by TracFone or by Verizon?
So that's the margin of error provided by Google.
Google, sorry. All right. And so again, we will see those icons and that those circles for the margin of error for the Google records on your mapping.
Yes, that's correct.
What do we see here in this legend?
So these were addresses that the investigative team provided to me that were of significance to this investigation. And so it's got the address associated with each one, but when I represent them on the map, it's going to be utilizing the icons to the left.
So you had Brandon Boudreaux's address, 3875 East Phelps Street in Gilbert, Arizona, as one of the places for you to have a point of interest?
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
And then two different units at 565 Pioneer Road, apartment 175 and apartment 107?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
And then a self-storage plus on Airport Road in Rexburg, Idaho?
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
And then a Walmart at Idaho Falls, Idaho?
Yes, ma'am.
And then also a Melanie Boudreaux residence in Gilbert, Arizona?
Yes, ma'am.
So first map, can you tell us what we're seeing here and explain everything?
Yeah, so these maps are just laying out where the locations of interest were that was provided by the investigative team. And so whenever I have a, like this is zoomed out a decent ways to incorporate both the address down in Idaho Falls and the addresses that are in Rexburg. And so there's a box to the side that's basically showing a zoomed in view of the apartment complex that includes the addresses for Alex Cox and Lori Vallow's apartments.
All right, so the Idaho Falls WM at the bottom is that Walmart, and then we can see the storage unit and then the zoomed out of the two apartments in Rexburg, Idaho.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Is this just a closer up single page of that?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
All right, what do we see here on page 12?
So the previous two pages were up in Idaho. This is down in the area of Gilbert, Arizona. So this includes two addresses, one for Brandon Boudreaux and one for Melanie Boudreaux.
Okay, and so we see that with the bluish purple and the pinky color?
Yes, and I didn't mention before, but you can see the red dots. Those are representative of Verizon Towers that are in the area as well.
Okay. So when we get to page 13, you had told us that you were provided with the HomerJMaximus@gmail.com records that were obtained by law enforcement. Did those HomerJMaximus@gmail.com Google records show that the records were tied to an MEID number?
Yes, so that's a mobile equipment identifier. In the case of Google, this is very similar to what's called an IMEI, or International Mobile Equipment Identifier. The IMEI is the equivalent kind of like a VIN on a phone. So it's associated with the hardware itself of the cell phone.
And so why is that important to see that the Google records for the Homer J. Maximus is tied to this MEID number?
So anytime, I think I mentioned it before, but anytime a phone accesses a Google account, Google keeps a record of that. And one of the things that they record is that MEID number, which like I said, in this case is synonymous with the IMEI or the hardware of a phone. So that identifies a device. So what I can do with that number is I can then take that to different cellular providers and determine whether that number has ever shown up on their network and whether they can associate that number to an actual telephone number.
And was that MEID number that we see here on page 13 that is associated with Alex Cox's Google records associated with that cell phone number 304-960-5998?
It was.
And did you determine or were you able to review records to see when that association occurred?
Yeah, so if you go to the next page of the report, that's going to be a record that we received from Verizon. And it shows that the, again, IMEI is associated with the 304-960-5998. And they list an effective date of September 27th, 2019.
And just going back at the bottom of this information, we saw a registration time and a first data connection time. What is that?
So that's showing when that device accessed the Google account for the first time. And we see also the September 26th, 2019 at 7:58, which would be again in UTC time. So to get to either Idaho or Arizona, you would have to subtract 6 to 7 hours to get to the time of where that occurred.
So to be clear that we understand, what we're seeing now is that the HomerJMaximus@gmail.com records from Google, the Wi-Fi and the GPS data are always going to reflect that 480-351 number, correct?
Yes, ma'am, correct.
But there is data in the Google records that now has been associated to that 304-960-5998.
Yes, and as I mentioned earlier, you can have multiple phones that access your Google account, But unless you have location history turned on every single one of those phones, Google is not going to record the location history associated with those phones. It's only going to record it on the device that you specifically turn that location history on.
So when we get to page 15 here, what are we seeing in these records?
So whenever you have a phone that is, like in this instance, purchased through TracFone, but utilizing the Verizon network, there's two different places that law enforcement has to go to get the complete set of records. So we would have to go to Verizon in order to see the call detail records and what towers are being utilized by that phone. But the point of purchase and subscriber information, we would need to go to TracFone. So specifically, this is the point of purchase information from TracFone associated with the number ending 5958.
So this tells us that this 5958 TracFone was purchased at a Walmart at Idaho Falls, Idaho?
Yes, correct.
And when does it show that being purchased?
So it shows it being purchased on September the 25th, 2019, at approximately 7:10 p.m.
Okay. And does it show a store number of 5494?
Yes, ma'am, it does.
So when we get to page 16, we start to see those icons for the Wi-Fi. So we're now talking about the 9120 number?
Yes, and so being this is the first map, I'll explain it a little bit more thoroughly than the others. But as you can see at the top, you're going to see what this record represents, Google location history associated with the homerjmaximus@gmail.com account. And then basically, I'm putting the bookends of the times at the top. So this record, these records are from September 25th, 2019, starting at 7:07 p.m. and continuing through 7:16 p.m. There's six of them, so you see a summary box. They're all sourced or derived from Wi-Fi, and of the six, the margin of error is between 16 and 100 meters, which you can see with the black circles. Obviously, the smaller one there in the middle is closer to the 16 meters, whereas the larger ones are at 100 meters margin of error, and they are consistent with the device 9120 reporting its location to Google as being at the Walmart on Utah Avenue in Idaho Falls during that time period.
So basically, the 9120 cell phone is reading Wi-Fi signals around it and reporting that margin of error to Google.
Yes, and one thing I didn't explain earlier is that whenever a location is derived from Wi-Fi, it doesn't mean the device was connected to specific Wi-Fi points. It just needed to be in range of those Wi-Fi points and see it. So if you've ever experienced where you're going through the airport or you're looking at your location on Google Maps and it says turn on Wi-Fi to get a more accurate or precise location, it's because Google has a pretty vast database of knowing where Wi-Fi access points are throughout the United States. And so if I'm sitting here and I'm close to a McDonald's that has a Wi-Fi hotspot on it, and my phone sees that Wi-Fi hotspot, I don't need to connect to it for Google to know that that specific Wi-Fi hotspot is located at a specific address. And then Google can estimate my location based on my phone seeing those different Wi-Fi access points.
So in this case, we see the phone that's subscribed to Alex Cox, that's using his Google account, is at this Walmart in Idaho Falls between 7:07 p.m. and 7:16 p.m.?
Correct. I would say it's consistent with being at that Walmart.
And so we had seen in the prior slide that the track phone, the 304-960-5958 number, was purchased around 7:10 p.m.?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
So this phone associated to Alex Cox is utilizing or is reading the Wi-Fi around it and providing this data around the same time when that track phone, the 304 number, is being purchased at that Walmart?
Yes, ma'am, correct.
What does this next map show us, page 17?
So again, I'll speak a little bit more thoroughly on this one since it's the first time I'm showing a tower and sector being represented on my report. So again, at the top, you see the tower interactions, and the number associated with it is going to be the number ending 4652. The date, again, I'll usually book into this unless everything occurs within that same minute, but we're looking at September the 25th, 2019, at 7:08 p.m. And we see two incoming calls that occur, and 4652 is utilizing a tower and sector that is in close proximity to that same Walmart on Utah Avenue.
Now, when we are looking at this cell tower usage, do you know whether or not that phone has to be within that azimuth?
Sure. So whenever you're talking about radio frequency propagation and how what the footprint of a tower's coverage area looks like, it's definitely not best represented by lines in the sand. It's more representative of like a cloud, to where if you think about, if you look at the lights in this courtroom, you have the light that's shining up in the corner there, and you can see it pretty bright on the wall. But as you get farther down the wall, that light starts to dissipate and starts to get more and more dim. There's not just a line up there on the wall where the light ends. Radio frequency can be looked at the same way. So that signal is going to dissipate as it gets farther and farther away from the area where it's meant to provide coverage to. And so when you're looking at how I'm depicting this on a map, I'm showing the sector based on the azimuth and both sides of what the endpoints of that sector look like. But I would expect to see a phone that is in close proximity to that line potentially still be on a sector, even if it's not within that parameter. All that to say that when I look at this particular graphic, based on my training and experience, I would say that tower and sector is consistent with providing coverage to that Walmart due to the close proximity.
So what we can say is that the 4652 number associated to Lori Vallow is utilizing a tower in the area of the Walmart within a couple minutes of that track phone, the 304 number being purchased at that Walmart.
Correct, 2 minutes prior.
And in fact, does one of her phone calls last about 10 minutes?
Yes, ma'am, correct.
So through the time of that purchase even?
Yes, ma'am. I would just point out that whenever, if you go back, sorry, to that page, whenever I'm looking at a tower interaction, whenever that phone is interacting with the network, we're looking at whenever that phone initiates that specific interaction. And so during that 10 minutes of time, I can't tell you specific to Verizon where that phone was located. I can only tell you at 7:08 and 31 seconds, it was utilizing that tower and sector. But let's say, for instance, that phone were to move out of the area, that would not be able to be determined by the records that I have.
That phone number that is being called at that time as well, are you familiar with that phone number?
I am, yes, ma'am.
The 480-266-8587. Whose phone number is that associated to?
I had that associated with Melanie Boudreaux.
So at the time that Alex Cox's phone is in the Walmart, at the time that that track phone is being purchased, Lori Vallow is speaking with Melanie Boudreaux using a cell tower in the area of that Walmart as well.
I wouldn't be able to say who was speaking with who. I could only say that the phone number 4652 received an incoming call from 8587 and then who those numbers are associated with.
So at the time that the phone associated to Lori Vallow is using a cell tower in the area of the Walmart, she is receiving a call from the phone associated to Melanie Boudreaux.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's September 25th.
Yes, ma'am, correct.
What do we see then when we get to page 18 here?
This is looking at the first mappable record for the number ending 5998 on September the 26th at approximately 11:31 p.m. making an outbound call utilizing a tower and sector that provides coverage to both Lori and Alex's residences.
All right, so this is the phone that was purchased at the Walmart that we were just discussing in the prior maps.
Yes, ma'am, correct.
So on the 25th, that phone is purchased from the Walmart, where we see cell phones associated to Alex Cox and Lori Vallow being there or near there at the time of the purchase. And now we see the phone being activated.
So I wouldn't be able to say specific to whether that's the actual activation, but that is a call, I believe, to a number associated with either Verizon or TracFone, but.
We do know from the prior records that the phone was activated on the 26th, though.
Correct. I know from records, and I don't know if it was one that we showed in here, but I know that it first started being used on the 26th.
And I think if we were looking at page 13, we showed the first data connection time was September 26th at 7:58 p.m. UTC.
Correct. That was when it connected to Google, if I'm recalling correctly. And so the phone wouldn't necessarily have to have Verizon service to connect to Google. It could have done that via Wi-Fi or some other method to connect to Google the first time.
So what we're seeing here then is something potentially different, where we now know this phone, the 304, is actually using cell towers and able to now make outgoing calls.
Correct.
And it's using a tower that would be consistent with covering the apartments for Lori Vallow and Alex Cox.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, what do we see here? We're still on September 26th and around the 2 minutes from the previous map.
Yeah, so this is just a record in close proximity in time showing a Google location record where the number ending 9120 was reporting its location to Google as consistent with being at Alex Cox's apartment. That's on September the 26th, 2019 at 11:33 p.m.
So we see the track phone from Walmart using a cell tower at 11:31, and then we see Alex Cox's cell phone, reading Wi-Fi at 11:33.
It's reporting its location to Google at 11:33.
You've jumped ahead a couple days. So we had September 26th. Now we're looking at September 30th.
Yes, ma'am.
What are you depicting here, and what did you find from the records that you reviewed?
So this is showing on September the 30th, 2019, between 4:32 and 4:37 p.m., starting at 4:32, the number ending 9120 is reporting its location to Google consistent as being at Alex Cox's apartment, and then showing movement at 4:34, and by 4:36, the 9120 phone is reporting its location to Google consistent with being at Lori Vallow's apartment.
Okay, and so that's where, when we're looking at that R15, that's the margin of error of 15 meters?
Yes, ma'am, correct.
So the phone is within 15 meters of being at Lori Vallow's.
That's what Google is reporting.
We're still at September 30th here?
Yes, ma'am. And so that's looking at the remainder of the day going from September the 30th from 4:38 p.m. all the way to 11:59 p.m. Approximately 94 different records, all consistent with the number ending 9120 reporting its location to Google as being in the area of Lori Vallow's apartment.
And so here, because you had so many Wi-Fi readings that are reportings, you just put that there were 93 Wi-Fi and one GPS.
Yeah, and basically what I was trying to look at is whether there were any instances that indicated that that device went back to Alex Cox's apartment, and I was unable to find any.
So we're on page 22. What are we now seeing here?
So again, at the top, I'm basically bookending the dates and times. So we're looking at two different uses of the Verizon network by the number ending 5998. The first one is on September the 30th at approximately 12:34 p.m., utilizing a tower and sector that's up in Rexburg, Idaho. And then the next use that we see is October the 1st, 2019, the same phone number ending 5998, using a tower and sector consistent with being down in Arizona.
So the 12:34 p.m., that's Idaho time?
That's correct.
So when we looked at the movement, that would be before we saw the 9120 phone associated to Alex Cox moving from Alex Cox's apartment to Lori Vallow's?
Correct. And I would point out that this is not showing that at 12:34 that device began heading south towards Arizona. That's just the record that I had at 12:34. So there was no other use between those two time periods, so I'm not able to estimate where that phone was during that time period.
Okay. So we know at 12:34 p.m. on September 30th, that track phone, the 304 number, is still in Rexburg, Idaho, utilizing or receiving an incoming call at that time.
Yes, ma'am.
So let's talk about that call. Do you recognize that phone number, the 515-402-0143 number?
I do.
And that is a call being made to this Walmart track phone?
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
By whom?
So I have that number associated with Chad Daybell.
So Chad Daybell's phone is calling this Walmart track phone that just was activated a couple days earlier on September 30th at 12:34.
Yes, ma'am.
And then we don't see any call records for this track phone until October 1st, the next day.
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
We see on this map that you have 9:19 a.m. So this is Arizona time?
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
And so at this point, on at 9:19 a.m. on October 1st, that track phone from Walmart in Idaho Falls is now using a cell tower in Arizona.
Yes, ma'am.
And do we have it? We've seen the prior box showed an incoming call. When we talk about outgoing, does that mean this track phone is making that phone call to someone?
It does.
And so who is this track phone calling at 9:19 a.m. on October 1st?
It's the same number from the previous Chad Daybell, the number ending 0143.
So map 23, what do we see here?
So since this is going back and forth between Arizona and Idaho, I tried to put the map of the specific state that it represents, just in case you're not familiar with a specific area. But this is showing on October the 1st, 2019, between 2:56 p.m. and 2:59 p.m., movement of the 9120 phone, because it's reporting its location to Google as being three different locations along East Center Street in Rexburg, Idaho.
All right, so October 1st, 2:56 p.m. to 2:59 p.m. Idaho time, we see the 480-351 number associated to Alex Cox. His Google is reporting this location data.
Yes, ma'am.
Meanwhile, we see the track phone from the Walmart that also has been associated to the Homer J. Maximus Google account is in Arizona.
Correct.
What do we see in this next map?
So this is looking at October the 1st, 2019, from 3:10 p.m. to 3:36 p.m. The 9120 phone is reporting its location to Google, consistent with being in the area of the self-storage plus in Rexburg, Idaho.
So Did you ever view video from the self-storage unit from this time period of October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd?
I believe I did, but it's been some time since then.
You show some records there, so you were provided at least with information. Let me ask you this. Were you provided with information that Lori Vallow had rented a storage unit at this location at 433 Airport Road in Rexburg, Idaho?
I was, and one of those pieces of information was the receipt that you can see on the that page of the report.
Okay. And so when we're talking about the relevance of this, it was one of the locations in the original map that you were asked to look at during this time period?
Yes, ma'am, correct.
So to understand what we have going on October 1st, we have Lori Vallow renting a storage unit in Rexburg, Idaho, at this time on October 1st.
That's based on the receipt that I was provided. Okay. That would be the extent of my knowledge.
At the same time, you have the cell phone associated to Alex Cox reporting Wi-Fi and GPS location data to Google at the same time that this is all, that Lori Vallow is renting this unit.
Yes, ma'am, correct.
What do we see then in map number 25?
So this is close to the same time period as the page before, October the 1st, 2019 at 3:24 p.m. And this is showing use of the 4652 phone for two incoming calls, utilizing a tower and sector in Rexburg, Idaho, that would provide coverage to the area of the self-storage plus.
All right, so the previous map was about 3:10 to 3:36. So this is in that time period towards the end of it. The phone number we're talking about is the one that we've associated to Lori Vallow?
Yes, ma'am, correct.
And so when we see this cell tower use, is that a cell tower that would be consistent with providing coverage to the storage unit?
Yes, correct. And I say that because I'm familiar with the area and familiar with the terrain. And that's why I'm able to say that that tower and sector would provide coverage to that general area.
Okay. Now, when we're looking at this time, we see 3:24 p.m. Idaho time. What would that be Arizona time?
So Arizona is 1 hour behind, so that would be about 2:24.
So at 2:24 Arizona time, this 480-266-8587 number is calling Lori Vallow's cell phone?
Correct.
And is that 480-266-8587 number the one you told us is associated to Melanie Boudreaux?
Yes, ma'am.
And so all of this is going on while we also see Alex Cox's cell phone providing that GPS and Wi-Fi data for being in the area of that storage unit as well.
Yes, ma'am.
So we're continuing on October 1st in this, still in Idaho?
Yes, ma'am. This is October 1st at 5:17 p.m. Again, the 9120 phone is reporting its location to Google, consistent with being in the area of the Rexburg, Idaho temple.
So we've been talking about October 1st. When we get to page 27, are we now on October 2nd?
Yes, ma'am.
So we had some cell phone or one cell tower use by that Walmart track phone on October 1st. Are you now reflecting cell tower usage by that track phone on October 2nd?
Yes, ma'am. So this is showing records associated with the 5998 number between October 2nd, between 702 and 720. Starting over on the left side, using a tower, two different sectors on a tower, 702 to 709 on the sector facing west. And then we see a shift at about 717 to utilization of the tower facing north-northeast, sector facing north-northeast, excuse me. Then by 719, we start to see use of a tower and sector that's just east of that location. My examination of these records, I would say it's consistent with that device likely moving eastbound.
Okay. So from 7:02 to about 7:18, the Walmart track phone from Idaho Falls, Idaho, is using cell towers in the area of Melanie Boudreau's residence?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
And then after 7:18, that cell phone, track phone from Walmart in Idaho Falls, Idaho, is now utilizing a cell tower closer to Brandon Boudreau's residence?
Yes, ma'am.
Is this a continuation of that morning reflecting that Walmart track phone?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Can you tell us what this map is showing us?
So this is showing the same thing, the 5998 phone on October 2nd between 7:22 and 7:24, utilizing two different towers, and specifically the tower more in the middle of the page, two different sectors on that tower, consistent with being in the area of Brandon Boudreau's residence.
So from 7:22 to 7:24, we're seeing cell tower use from that Walmart track phone, consistent with it being in the area of Brandon Boudreau's residence.
Yes, ma'am.
And this is the same cell phone we're talking about that has been associated to Alexander Cox's homerjmaximus@gmail.com Google account.
Yes, ma'am.
So we went back to Idaho in this photo?
Yes, ma'am. So this is back in Idaho in Rexburg, and this is showing on October the 2nd, 2019 at 8:02 in the morning Arizona time, which would have been 9:02 up in Idaho. But there is an outbound call made from the number ending 9120 to the number ending 4652. This call is a little bit over 23 minutes. And during the call, both phones are using the same tower and sector, both of which provide coverage to the apartment complex that had Lori Vallow and Alex Cox's units in it.
So basically, we have the cell phone associated to Alex Cox, the 480-351-9120, calling the cell phone associated to Lori Vallow, 480-489-4652, at 9:02 Idaho time.
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
8:02 Arizona time.
Yes, ma'am.
And that call you said was not quite 24 minutes?
Approximately 23 minutes and 34 seconds.
While that is going on at 8:02 a.m., we've seen just a little earlier that the Walmart track phone from Idaho Falls is now utilizing cell towers in Gilbert, Arizona?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, during this call, did you have any Wi-Fi or GPS location data for that Homer J. Maximus Google account associated to that 351 number?
Yes, ma'am. There was one at 9 o'clock and 9:10, both consistent with the 9120 phone being in the area of Lori Vallow's apartment. But I'll also add to that, that entire day, that phone only reported being in the area of Lori Vallow's apartment, not Alex Cox's.
So basically, we continued what we saw from the day before, other than we saw, well, let me say this. So we saw the phone going over to the phone being the phone number associated to Alex Cox, the 9120 on the 30th, move over to Lori Vallow's apartment.
Consistent with that, yes, ma'am.
And then we saw location data provided to Google for that same phone, the 9120, moving at some point away from Lori Vallow's residence, going to, for instance, an area near the self-storage unit?
Yes, ma'am.
Going to the temple?
Yes, ma'am.
And then returning back to Lori Vallow's apartment?
Yes, ma'am.
And then we have, on the 2nd in the morning, this phone call between Lori Vallow's cell phone, the one associated with her, and Alex Cox's cell phone, or the one associated with him.
Yes, ma'am.
So as we get to slide 30, what are we reviewing here now? Where are we at?
So we're back in Arizona looking at records for 5998. Here we're looking at October 2nd between 8:39 and 9:16 a.m. And the 5998 phone is utilizing a tower and sector in the general area of Brandon Boudreau's residence. And there's three outgoing calls, two incoming calls, all from the number ending 0143.
Is that the phone that has been associated, that you are aware of, associated to Chad Daybell?
Yes, ma'am.
And Chad Daybell is Lori Vallow's husband?
I'm not sure if she was at the time, but that's my understanding now.
So when we look at this phone, were you aware that the shooting of Brandon Boudreau at 3875 East Phelps Street occurred around 9:13 or so in the morning?
It's been a period of time. I know it was sometime around then, but I wasn't sure the exact time.
So in the time period leading up to right around that 9:13 time, that's track phone from Idaho Falls Walmart is utilizing cell towers in Gilbert, Arizona, that would cover the area of Brandon Boudreau's home at 3875 East Phelps Street.
Yes, ma'am.
What do we see here on map 31?
So here we see starting at on October the 2nd at 9:17 in the morning, use of a tower and sector facing north on that tower, showing use of the 5998 phone, and that tower and sector would provide coverage to the area of Brandon Boudreau's residence. Then we see a shift starting at 9:19 to a sector that's facing more southeast. And continuing through 9:22, we see use of a different tower southeast of that location, consistent with that device moving south-southeast out of the area.
So if we had received information that the shooter in this case moved south to Pecos Road that we see here in the map and then headed away, is that sort of the same direction that we're talking about the cell phone is using towers in that same direction?
I would say it's consistent with that movement.
And then we see the cell tower as the morning moves on going further south and east?
Yes, ma'am. I would just say south, southeast, based on the tower locations that I was looking at in the records.
And obviously you're not able to tell us exactly where this cell phone is because it doesn't have the Wi-Fi or GPS location data being reported.
Correct. I'm only estimating locations based on the records that I have, and the records that I have are going to dictate how precise I can be with those estimated locations.
So here we know the cell towers that are being utilized by this phone during the morning there.
Yes, ma'am.
And again, when we look at these phone calls, incoming and outgoing, were all of them being made or received by that same phone number associated to Chad Daybell?
So here we're only looking at one call, but yes, that call is to the 0143 and it's an outgoing call to that number.
So we have cell towers that are reporting the phone, and then we also have phone calls starting to be made.
Correct.
Okay. So the first call we see after the 9:15 one from the prior page is at 9:22, which is an outgoing call to Chad Daybell's phone, cell phone?
Yes, ma'am.
What do we see now here on page 32?
So this is looking at Google location information on October the 2nd, 2019, between 9:02 and 9:34. The 9120 phone is reporting its location to Google, consistent with being at Lori Vallow's apartment.
Okay. And you've told us that sort of this has been at any time from the 30th when you documented that cell phone associated to Alex Cox, the 9120, moving from Alex Cox's apartment over to Lori Vallow's. From September 30th through this time at 9:34 a.m. on October 2nd, did you ever see the phone moved back to Alex Cox's apartment?
No, ma'am, I did not.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.